Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
The Super Bowl is over. Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. We're taping this on Wednesday, February 5th. We will have all the details coming up with John Murray, Mr. Executive Director. He's going to rehash a wild sort of prop bet endings. For a couple of those, also obviously the Chiefs' victory, and all the nuances there and how the Nevada Gaming did, just a lot to kind of put a bow on the NFL season. So John Murray's coming up, as is Preston Johnson. You know him from the podcast here before, but also Daily Wager. He's got the beard, great insight, math modeler. So we'll talk NBA with him, and we're also gonna have the latest with Murray about the Dodgers trade, Dodgers, Red Sox, Mookie Betts, and David Price now headed to LA to join the Blue Crew. So all that's straight ahead. We'll also name the winner of your baby bankroll bonanza. A nice fun finish with the Belldozer playing a significant role with his receiving yard. So that's coming up. Don't forget, Scott Van Pelt has now joined the world of podcasting. If you haven't already, made sure you download and subscribe to the SV Pod and Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And the big game might be over, but the action is not slowing down just yet. As one football season ends, another begins. Celebrate the kickoff of the new professional football season starting this weekend with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch mean more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. So, if you've been thinking about trying a new type of one-day fantasy football, now is the time to play, because nothing adds to the sweat of watching the games quite like having a shot at over $100,000 in prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use code Doug. New users enter code Doug during sign-up and play for a shot at $100,000 in prizes this weekend. That's code Doug. And play for a shot at $100,000 in prizes this weekend. Only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Andy Reid certainly understands that, and he wasn't about to kick field goals. He went for it on fourth down a couple times, and perhaps that proved to be the difference. Regardless, he is finally a Super Bowl champion, as is Patrick Mahomes. Welcome in, Mr. Executive Director.
I'm really glad Patrick Mahomes got the Super Bowl. Somebody made a great point in an interview I was listening to. I'd give them credit, but I don't remember who it was. But they basically said it's great that Mahomes won the Super Bowl at age 24, so we don't have to listen to the nonsense, can't win the big one argument for his whole career.
That is a great point, because those hot takes would be coming, right?
Right. And it's the most low IQ sports argument that a person can make. And I laughed during the build-up to the game last week. There were people, what has this guy ever won? And I was thinking, he's 24 years old. This is his second year as a starting quarterback, and he's already in the Super Bowl. What is he supposed to do? I'd say Patrick Mahomes is well ahead of schedule, whether he won on Sunday or not.
I would agree with that. And it is a interesting discussion that really you were way ahead of, because you were talking about how everything broke the Chiefs' way, right? The Week 17 loss for the Patriots to allow Kansas City to have a first-round bye and then get to host the AFC Championship game because the Ravens lost in the divisional round. So it was there, and then obviously some Niners kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit, but give the Chiefs a lot of credit, and it feels right. Someone else said this. When you combine last year and this year, it feels right the Chiefs won one Super Bowl, right? Like last year, couple bad breaks, the D Ford offsides. Just all in all, I think one Super Bowl title for the Chiefs after the last 2 years makes sense.
I thought they were the best team in the league last year. I said that many times last year. I actually thought Baltimore was the best team in the league this year. But, yeah, I think Kansas City getting one Super Bowl out of the last two seasons is appropriate. And it's good for Mahomes, too. We don't have to listen to all that stupid argument. And You know that we've been hearing that since forever, since as long as we've been following sports. I remember people saying that about LeBron James when he was like 25. Like, is this guy ever going to win the big one? Well, of course he is. He's like 25 years old. So at least we don't have to go through that with Mahomes, and we can just enjoy his career. And he's definitely the best player in the NFL right now, and he looks like he's got a chance to be one of the great quarterbacks of all time. But if I told you 9 years ago after Green Bay beat Pittsburgh in the Super Bowl, if I told you we'd be 9 years later and Aaron Rodgers still wouldn't have been back to the Super Bowl, I don't think you would have believed me.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. We did a prop culture on Monday's show, and total Super Bowl rings in Mahomes' career, 2.5. So he's got to win 2 more. I still like the over, even though there's like 4 quarterbacks who've won 3 or more, just because my biggest thing was, okay, so the biggest negative of that is obviously how hard it is, but he's on a rookie deal currently. So once he's going to get paid, that obviously affects the domino effect of his supporting cast, but also the Brady Belichick era. This dynasty has prevented others from getting that third. Either they're the new Brady Belichick, or Brady Belichick not being there has kind of allowed others to get there. I mean, look, Peyton Manning, Big Ben, we're all denied opportunities, maybe even a Philip Rivers run. Who knows? But the Brady Belichick era is something we'll never see again. So if you remove that out of the equation, which essentially it is moving forward, I would lean to the over, but obviously history on the side of the under.
Well, Brady Belichick was the perfect storm. Not only were they both so individually great, but you can't discount how valuable it was to them that the AFC East was so bad for all those years, and they basically got a first-round bye pretty much every year. That was definitely a factor in their success. But I think you already hit it on the head about the contract. I mean, think about how great that Seattle team that went to back-to-back Super Bowls was, and then they had to extend Russell Wilson, and the roster really suffered because of that. Kansas City is going to have to extend Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be the highest-paid player in NFL history, and the rest of their roster will suffer.
Another great point that someone made this week to me is, in the last 20 years, you can make a case that Andy Reid is the second-best coach.
Yeah, well, with Andy Reid, it was fair to do the incredibly low IQ, can he win the big one argument, because Andy Reid was the head coach, and Andy Reid's been a head coach for like 20 years. So, I mean, I thought there were some fair questions to ask about Andy Reid, a guy who lost so many conference championship games, lost the Super Bowl.
Well, they used to say that about Tony Bennett and Virginia Stock. My point is, and this is what look at all the quarterbacks he's taken to the playoffs. I mean, McNabb, Jeff Garcia, Alex Smith. Did Kevin Cobb ever go to the play? I mean, he's put up such incredible numbers.
Who was the coach of that Eagles team that had Mike Vick at quarterback that lost to Green Bay in the wild card round the year they won the Super Bowl? Was that Reed? I think it was.
Yeah. I mean, he's taken some really good quarterbacks, but also some media. He has done it with like a rotation of starting QBs. Like Kevin Cobb, like I said, I think he was Foles his first year too. Not 100% there, but either way, it was interesting to kind of think about what Reed has accomplished. But to your point, like a lot of those game mismanagement will always be haunting him. But not this year. He got the Super Bowl, and you guys got the big W as well. The books win one for the house. Nevada Gaming released its numbers yesterday. Second highest handle in Super Bowl history for, again, in the state of Nevada, and the second biggest win in terms of money. And, you know, we talked about in the last pod, Murray, you were like, hey, if it stays under, pretty uneventful. You said 24-17, 31-20 is comparable. And sure enough, no safety, no non-offensive touchdown, no two-point conversion, no overtime. So pretty uneventful in terms of the big payouts of the props.
Well, because we won so much money, let me now try to get people to feel sorry for me by complaining about the things we didn't win on. Mahomes scoring a touchdown was a disaster for us. And Mahomes scoring the first touchdown of the game was a complete disaster for us. And it was frustrating because it looked like Damian Williams almost scored, and then it really looked like Darwin Thompson scored on first and goal.
Right.
But Mahomes ended up scoring on second and goal on what was a pretty cool play, actually. But that was by far our biggest loser of the game, was that Mahomes touchdown, because everybody was betting on him to score a touchdown. We actually closed that at less than 3-1. And then compounding that with him also scoring the first touchdown of the game, That was a pretty big loser for us. So we could have won a lot more if Darwin Thompson was maybe a little bit taller and he had gotten into the end zone on that first and goal.
Or if Mahomes pitched it on that third and goal. I mean, he had Williams wide open on the pitch to the outside of the pylon.
And we would have won considerably more if San Francisco had won the game. So, like, the way we had it structured, San Francisco to the under was just an absolute home run for us. And when it was 20-10 in the fourth quarter, we didn't want to say anything out loud, but we were kind of looking at the numbers. Everybody's got the computers in front of them, and crunching the figures of how much we could win. And I think we would have if they had just stopped that 3rd and 15 play to Tyreek Hill.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
So you guys are sitting there licking your chops. Obviously, yeah. The biggest story with the props was the Mahomes rushing yards. And
oh, yeah.
Just take
and
us
that was
through
very
that.
Good for us.
Yeah, just take us through that. When you're watching the game, you see Mahomes take, I'm going to say the second sack, right? So the first one was like 6 yards. The next one was bigger. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, there's so much going on in that moment because right when, you know, right as the game is ending and you know what the final score is going to be, like we were posting the futures. We were posting Kansas City to win the Super Bowl in the future book. And some of our guys were running out to the front line to sort of start organizing the tellers, making sure the tellers had everything they need for the cash out of the Super Bowl. And the customers are starting to line up and everybody's going crazy. And you're not really watching the game anymore. And you look up and it's like, wow, he just took another loss there. And then he took another loss there. It's like, somebody pull up a box score. How many rushing yards does Mahomes have? And it's certainly an incredibly bad beat for anybody that had the over. One of the worst prop beats of all time.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, look, it's one of the more notable ones, given it's a Super Bowl and it's the star quarterback and just the sequence of events that it took to go that way. But just a head scratch. I mean, look, when you have that prop and you're at a couple yards over, you're worried about some kneel downs. I get that. But I can't imagine it's on anyone's radar. They're thinking you already cashed that a long time ago. And just blindsided it, for lack of a better word.
Well, you know, crazy stuff happens at the end of the games. I mean, we saw that in the San Francisco-Baltimore Super Bowl when Baltimore intentionally took a safety with, you know, seconds left in the game, and all the people that had laid no safety lost on that play.
Well, I thought there was a chance Mahomes was going to run back this time on fourth down instead of throwing it down the sideline.
We talked about that. And really, this all goes back to the fact that Damian Williams could have just fallen to the ground on that touchdown run, and the game would have been over right there.
No, because there would have still been the kneel down thing and all that, the same thing. Because the Niners had two timeouts. You could have held them to a field goal and a 7-point margin. So, I mean, the right thing would have been done, do like the Madden play where you run along the 1 yard line until someone comes to tackle you. But aside from that, no, that was the right. That was the right play, all things, because of the two timeouts thing. It wasn't like a Todd Gurley situation.
That really hurt us, though. But I was surprised.
Why did it hurt you? Why did it hurt you?
There were just some props that we lost because of that play.
Okay.
This is something that I find strange. Why was there like people melting down on Twitter about Mahomes being the MVP? I didn't have any problem with that at all. I mean, I guess I was biased because we won so much money on Mahomes being MVP. I have to think all the people that were crying for Williams just had Damian Williams MVP bets. And if that's the case, I don't blame them. But I thought Mahomes was a pretty clear MVP of that game.
So I was with you on this. And then we talked to Hasselbeck on the show, Tim Hasselbeck, on Monday. And he brought up that Williams was the most consistent player all game, and he was 11 first downs, which is tied for the second most in Super Bowl history. He said that a lot of the plays, and this is something I overlooked, a lot of the plays looked like were dump-offs or whatever, like five-yard plays, and he turned them into like longer gains and first downs. So that was something that he noticed. And Mahomes, as much as he like led the comeback the 3rd and 15, he was pretty average and below average all game until the fourth quarter. Again, in Tim's eyes. So, splitting hairs.
Very high degree of difficulty game for Mahomes, though, against that San Francisco defense. Those guys were in his lap the whole game, talking about the 49ers front four. It's not like Mahomes was able to just hang back there in the pocket and just throw to wide-open receivers. It was a very, degree of difficulty game for Mahomes.
I agree. I'm just telling you if Williams scores the first touchdown instead of Mahomes, you almost can't argue with the stat line.
Then three touchdowns, yeah.
Which is kind of stupid if you think about it. It was from the half-yard line.
That's how it works, but yeah.
But he got there on fourth down, but the play call was great. Yeah. You know, I understand the justification of Williams. I don't think it's far-fetched at all. Like, I think it was kind of like James White a couple years ago in the Falcons Super Bowl. I think there was a strong case you could make as well, although Brady led the comeback and all that. Like, I understand it goes to quarterbacks and great, but, like, the stat line was pretty impressive. The performance, he had over 100 yards rushing. Now, my whole thing is, like, kind of the wins above replacement. Any other quarterback, they have no chance to win. Other running backs, could have won, right? So I'm with you. Mahomes is so valuable, and he's doing stuff that, you know, we can't process in other quarterbacks. But other running backs, you know, as we've talked about a lot in this podcast, are kind of interchangeable. With that being said, I could, if Williams got the award, I would have had no issue.
I think the forgotten play of the game is going to be Mahomes gets, I think it was Nick Bosa, strip sacked him, knocked the ball out of his hand, and the ball just bounced right back to Mahomes. And if that ball had bounced somewhere else and maybe the Niners had recovered it, I think the Niners would have won the Super Bowl.
No, I'm with you. And we had some fun props. I said I liked Mahomes to lose a fumble at 5-1.
Well, they fumbled. I think the ball was fumbled how many times in the game? 4, but none of them were recovered by the other team. I mean, something like that is very random, frankly. And there's all these stats that prove that fumbles lost, fumbles recovered are kind of a random thing. And certainly that was very fortunate play for the Chiefs there.
So in the end, it's a tough one for the Niners. You know, we all kind of like the elephant in the room was, does Jimmy G really have the respect and trust of his head coach? And ultimately we kind of learned that at the end of the first half, although some knuckleheads on Twitter thought I was crazy, but.
What was crazy? I mean, clearly they didn't even bother to call timeout to give him some more time with the football. I mean, Shanahan might as well have held up a sign that said, I don't trust this guy.
Yeah, and some idiot was like, well, look what happened. They were just playing the clock and setting it up. I'm like, no, they would have gone to halftime if Andy Reid didn't call timeout 19 seconds to go. So that's wrong because they ran straight up the middle and first and second down. But look, with that being said, playing that conservative approach should have been okay, all right, all things considered. And I think Jimmy G was on his way to a Super Bowl MVP just because the stat line was so sort of
he would
ordinary.
Have been the MVP. If they stopped that 3rd and 15, the play to Tyreek Hill, 20-10, you got to think Kansas City's going to punt there on 4th and 15 in all likelihood. 49ers get the ball back. They probably win the game. Who else would have been the MVP if it wasn't Jimmy G? Jimmy G would have been the Super Bowl MVP, I think, if his defense could have gotten that 3rd and 15 stop or if they had recovered that fumble I mentioned earlier. I think if either of those things happened, then he's the Super Bowl MVP.
So maybe Shanahan was just playing the conservative approach, knowing he'd get the second half kickoff to start. And that was kind of like his way to win, right? Rely on the running game, let's not get crazy. And when you're making that decision, you're accounting for the opposing quarterback in Mahomes, right? Like the other team had Blake Bortles, you would have probably pushed it, maybe a swing pass on first down, called the timeout initially, even on before the punt. So I think the Mahomes component is a large factor in all that, which is, you know, no surprise.
Well, it's very obvious that Shanahan's number one plan in that game was to shorten the game, was to keep Mahomes on the sideline as much as possible and to shorten the football game. And it was a pretty quick game.
It was a quick game, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we noticed that, except for the halftime show. That was not a quick halftime show. But the game itself was, I thought, very fast, and I think that's exactly how Shanahan drew it up. There were just a couple of plays there in the second half that if one of them could have gone his way, they would have won, and the balls just all seemed to bounce to Kansas City. But you could say the same thing last year in reverse about the AFC Championship game, where if any one of these plays had gone the Chiefs' way, they would have beat New England, and none of them went their way. And New England ended up winning that game. So, yeah, I agree with what you said at the top of the show about that out of these 2 years, they probably did deserve to win one of the two Super Bowls.
And I'm not saying I deserve to win the baby bankroll bonanza. But I did.
I was going to ask you
but
about
I did,
that.
But I did, yes.
You held off. Because I only had the under.
So you had the under for a dime. I had 100 on Breida to win the MVP, which he obviously did not. But I had a dime on the Belldozer over for his first reception and a dime on the total yards. And the Belldozer got one catch, and it went over.
For 9 yards, yeah. I think. He had one catch for 9.
And that hit. And I lost 500 on Jimmy G MVP as well. So I won 1,400. You won a dime. I already had a lead. So.
Well, congratulations, sir.
Yeah, that's, no, I mean, look. I like to thank the Academy.
Lashes?
Yeah, we'll dive deeper into what donation for Kai's baby fund. But
I'd be happy to donate to Kai. Kai's a good man.
Yeah.
Kai's fine, though. I don't think he really needs it.
It's time for baby.
No, I decided to play the start of it just to kind of. No, it was a good run. Look, it came down to the middles. I really should have had more middles, to be honest. There were a couple that really, I just didn't want to get too aggressive. But, you know, the bending of the rules, the extending of the bankroll. There's an asterisk next to this title. Let's just put it that way.
I wouldn't call it that. I mean, I really faded at the end of the year there. I just couldn't pick a winner. No surprises there. I've never touted myself as a real NFL handicapper. But I did like the under in that game, and we did talk about it on the last show. We thought that the total would drop, and it did. The total absolutely dropped from the it never, and I don't think it ever got higher than 55 in Nevada. If it did, I didn't see that. But I think it maxed out at 55, and it closed more in the 53 range, which I would still argue is a little bit high. I think the real total, and I'm not just saying this because it landed 51. I mean, we opened the game 51.5, and we thought that was a little bit high. So 55 was a really high number for that game.
Yeah, it really was. But you know what? Mahomes in the explosion of that offense was demonstrated in the last few minutes of the game.
Sure.
So. A couple things, but though it's funny, I talked about on the show the first quarter under. I like 10.5, but not 10. Lands 10. I mean, those jitters, those first half jitters are a real thing. And you talk to anyone who's ever played in the Super Bowl, and I have, and I remember Victor Cruz, man, he's like, man, you don't understand, like the lights, the opening kickoffs, the pressure. And that showed, I mean, it's understandable. These guys are humans, and I think coaches are more considerate early. Now, if the Kittle offensive pass interference is not called, maybe it's a touchdown and it lands 27. But the first half, 20, under 26.5 was a strong play as well.
It was, and we definitely saw sharp money on game, first half, and first quarter under here at the Westgate. I didn't agree with that Kittle offensive pass interference call.
I thought,
to me, that was just the very standard amount of contact we see between a receiver and a defensive back while the ball's in the air. I don't know how you can possibly call that offensive pass interference. But my guess is that they would have probably ended up kicking a field goal there, and it would have been 13-10 at halftime.
Right, right. Okay, we make the pivot to baseball, not hoops, baseball, because the Dodgers and Red Sox, I mean, look, it had been reported, but still, shockwaves throughout baseball, just given the names involved, the franchises involved. And so the Dodgers lineup, it is murder's row.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. I texted my brother on Sunday or Monday, and I was like, dude, it sounds like the Dodgers are going to get Mookie Betts. And, you know, he and I are big Nationals fans. And he just said something like, that's probably not going to be good for us. I mean, this Dodgers lineup right now looks ridiculous. And when they've got Walker Buehler on the mound, they're as good as any team in baseball. The thing is, if they get into a postseason series with a team like Washington – are they going to have enough depth in their starting pitching to beat the Nationals?
Well, see, I think Price is legit. I think he gets out of that sort of pressure cooker that is the Red Sox and his whole thing with Eckersley. I think Dodgers, I know it's a big city, but fan base and everything, much more forgiving than that Red Sox sort of situation. So I think he'll be fine. He's not the ace as well. Not that he was, but Chris Sale was in Boston. But I think he's better than Kershaw, but you never know. I mean, look, he could be the third starter. I think he's a huge acquisition. And the Betts, the outfield, the defense, right? You have Gold Glovers and Bellinger and Betts. I'm just, you know, the cynic in me is like, great. Now the Dodgers get the World Series and have to lose to the Yankees.
Well, the Dodgers look like they're just going to race through the division, but they do that every year. And they'll be judged entirely on what happens in October. But, I mean, on paper, the Dodgers look like by far the best team in the National League. And we lowered them a little bit yesterday. We lowered them down to plus 150 to win the pennant. and we knocked them down, which is ridiculous. We're sitting here in February. And we knocked them from 9-2 down to 7-2.
So plus 450 to plus 350 to win it all. I was pushing for a segment yesterday on the show. I was like, guys, we got to get ahead of this. Right now, they're 7-1 to win the World Series, and there's value there if they get bets. And like, I don't know. I really thought that we could have beat the market on that, and I did not personally. So I'm kicking myself. But I will say this in terms of. If they did not make this deal, I was a little worried about the Padres. I think people are sleeping on that lineup, and they were in the position to also add Mookie Betts. So not only do you get him as the Dodgers, you also prevent your division. You know, let's call him a rival right now because I don't think the Rockies and Giants are in the mix. I think they're the biggest threat right now. So you prevent your biggest rival in the division in terms of a competitive standpoint to get them.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd probably put Arizona in that mix too, but certainly the Dodgers are way ahead of all four of those teams. But the other big winner is really the New York Yankees. You consider they get Gerrit Cole from Houston, obviously. Now Mookie Betts is gone from Boston. think about how banged up the Yankees were last year. They had guys, what do they call it now, the IR or the IL. They don't call it the DL anymore.
Right. Right?
So they had all these guys hurt all year last year. They're constantly bringing guys up from AAA, and they still ran away with the American League East.
But the guys they brought up were getting production like the starter. So it's not, you know.
Oh, I know.
It's like what, true, I used to say about
the depth of the Yankee organization is incredible.
Well, it's like what I used to say about who's the Vikings quarterback prior to Kirk Cousins?
Case Keenum.
Case Keenum, yeah. So I was like, Cousins is an upgrade, but he's not an upgrade in what Keenum did, right? Like,
no.
Keenum's performance was like MVP type. So those guys were playing like the regular stars. So it's not like adding those stars back in the lineup. It was just going to be more likely that production would continue.
True, but you know, they lost Giancarlo Stanton in like the first week of the season.
Crazy.
Severino, did he even pitch at all last year, Luis Severino? A very, very deep organization. It looks like they've got really top shelf starting pitching. You know, we bumped Boston, the Red Sox, up to 50-1 for the World Series and 25-1 to win the pennant because it looks like the Yankees are just going to cruise.
I'll leave you with this, Murray.
Title.
I'll leave you with this, and I think I'm going to suggest it in my show meeting I'm about to run to. Who's more likely to reach the World Series, the Yankees or Dodgers?
Well, we've got them at the same exact odds to win the division, both minus 1,000. I'm going to go
with... What about
with
their pennants? What are the odds in their pennants?
Well, the Dodgers are a little... I don't know. I mean, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with the Dodgers, because I think the Dodgers would have made it to the World Series last year if they hadn't taken Walker Buehler out of the game in Game 5 against the Nationals. But you're right, though. The Dodgers right now, plus 150 for the NL, and the Yankees plus 110 for the AL. So our odds would say the Yankees also are a little bit lower to win the World Series. But I think there's a few better teams at the top of the American League, like the Astros. And that's why I would say that I think the Dodgers are going to get there this year.
All right, my man. Good stuff as always. A lot of fun. Thank you for all your time, flexibility on the schedule. Obviously, it's not easy doing all this. I know you're busy as well. So we're turning the page. We got March Madness around the corner, and we'll talk a lot more hoops in the coming weeks as well.
Congrats on the bonanza, and just let me know where to send that novelty giant check that I'm about to write, and I'll take care of that.
Sounds good. Be well.
Talk to you later.
At gambling, the deadly sin is to mistake bad play for bad luck.
Never bad play with our next guest, Preston Johnson. You know him from Daily Wager. You know him from previous occurrences here on the Behind the Bets podcast. You really know him for his beard. How are you, my friend?
I am doing well. Thank you. How are you?
Doing all right. So Super Bowl's behind us and a lot of fun. You were big on the anthem under. So congratulations there.
Thank you. Yeah, it worked out for us.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's usually like the squarest bet in the world of that and the coin flip. You know, it's kind of grouped together, the Gatorade, but sometimes there's some solid handicapping.
Sure.
You did it. And it's actually kind of nice because usually accounts don't get flagged when you have an anthem bet for the Super Bowl. But you're able to kind of, it's nice when they both work out that way or lined up, I should say. All right, so I'm going to talk hoops here. And we're going to get into hoops a lot more in the coming months, obviously. But Big stretch here with the NBA trade deadline, and there's some other interesting things. I know we've touched on Zion Williamson a bunch. That was my best bet on Super Bowl Sunday on Daily Wager. You had a Zion sort of component as well. I just think it's really fascinating seeing what's going on with him, Damian Lillard, and then the Houston Rockets, too, with this, you know, undersized lineup that can now switch everything. And it is kind of interesting because they're forcing teams to almost get out of their offense and just, if they want to, throw it down to their big man and use the height advantage, but that's not what they practice and that's not what they're accustomed to. But being undersized enables them to kind of switch everything and not miss a beat there. What have you found in terms of your modeling on that?
So it's been really interesting. You'll remember just going with the Rockets here a few days ago, they were playing the Pelicans. It was actually on Super Bowl Sunday in the morning. There was a total opened at 245. It was bet up to as high as 252. And a lot of it has to do with the Pelicans playing a fast pace anyway. In the top three, they've been playing even a little bit faster by about 2.5 possessions per game with Zion Williamson on the floor. And then the Rockets are number two in pace, so they're already fast. But then when they have no Capella and they're just playing P.J. Tucker at center, he's 6'5". Thabo Sefolosha has been coming off the bench. He's 6'6". They've been flying. They've been shooting way more threes. It's up and down, especially when Westbrook's on the floor. So, like, I understood the reasoning kind of behind that move up. I think anything in the 250s is still too extreme, even for those two teams. Same with the Bucks, we saw it, who played the Pelicans their very next game, and that total sat in the 246 range, and it also went under, if I recall, last night. So, for it, looking at these two teams and looking at the Rockets specifically, I'm just fascinated and ultimately kind of puzzled, just from a big basketball picture, how it's going to affect them winning long term when you're going small. Because if you look at just these two games, I think it's really intriguing because they've been, I think at one point late in the third quarter against the Pelicans on Sunday, they were plus 16 in turnovers by the end of the third quarter and losing the game. That's extremely hard to do. And it wasn't like the Pelicans were shooting way better than the Rockets were. It's because the Rockets were minus 25 in rebounds. This last night game against the Hornets, it was close until about 4 or 5 minutes left. They pulled away again. They were plus 13 in turnovers, but they also were out-rebounded by about 15, if I recall. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I just feel like it's not sustainable to be that far ahead in the turnover margin every single game. And that's really the only reason that they've been in the mix and won these games, because they're getting destroyed on the glass. They shot 63s, by the way, which is the third most all time in a regulation game with no overtime. They're probably going to break the record of 61, which is also by the Rockets. They've done it twice. So maybe there's some prop bet. I think someone should put up a prop bet. Will the Rockets attempt 62 or more threes in a game this season? But it's really, they're trying to maximize variance, I guess, right? They're just trying to shoot more threes, and they already were shooting a ton. They're trying to pick up the tempo. I will say one more thing. I had a friend of ours that actually messaged me this earlier this morning. If you look, like Miles Bridges had a 20 and 15 for the Hornets. I don't remember. I don't think he's ever had a 15 rebound game in his life. That Pelicans game, 4 of the 5 starters had double-digit rebounds, and Josh Hart off of the bench. Why aren't we blindly betting the opponent player rebound overs for the next week or two, at least until they finally play a center? If it's PJ Tucker at center and Thabo Sefolosha, these rebound totals are all way too low.
We should. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, so what I was alluding to earlier, and so the rebounds are obvious, right? Like, that makes a ton of sense. But yep. Then you factor in, so if you're an offense, and you know now there's no the long lost art of the postman, right? So if you have this huge height advantage, you're just gonna post up down low, but that's not what you normally practice. That's not what you normally do, especially the guards. Remember that would always happen when one of these undersized guards like Muggsy Bogues or whatever, these guards would try to post them up, and it would just kind of throw things out of whack on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah,
and I mean, look, it worked against Porzingis, Porzingis usually does that, posts up at the elbow, turns around, scores. It was easy. But if it's not what you normally do, it kind of throws them off. But the rebounds is what you're talking about. And just checking out a quick game log, quick scan, yeah, he's never had 11 was his previous high. So 15 boards for Bridges. But
yeah,
it is fascinating. I wonder if it's just in response to what the Lakers and Clippers have done. I mean, I think the Rockets are like, well, we're not beating them, these teams. Is that well, we're just going to chuck and duck for 4 out of 7 games?
Well, that's the thing, is that if you get hot from three for a series, you can ultimately beat anybody to some degree. And what they did actually is probably beneficial to if they're going up against the Clippers, because they have another 3-and-D guy in Robert Covington, and they can go smaller because P.J. Tucker can probably hang with Montrezl Harrell when it's all said and done. But the question then is of the Lakers, what are they going to do about Anthony Davis, even JaVale or Dwight Howard or even LeBron? Like, they're just going to overpower them. And so it seems like the incorrect move to make if you're going up against the Lakers. So these are my two thoughts. Maybe they have someone in the next, 36 to 48
right.
hours
they'll
be, that they can scoop up, that can fill that role as a center. Or maybe Tyson Chandler, who is on the roster still, he just hasn't even been playing, is just saving up all his energy for one last hurrah in the playoffs and giving him 24 minutes a game, and he can go up against Anthony Davis or what it may be. That's my two thoughts. Most likely probably going to be that they pick someone up. But they did get Jordan Bell from the T-Wolves in that trade last night, the 14 trade with 107 players involved. I don't know if he's actually going to play or not, but he is kind of an above-the-rim guy with that above-the-rim gravity, like Clint Capella can catch lobs out of the pick-and-roll from Harden or Westbrook. So we'll see if they utilize him at all. But I'm very intrigued because this high-variance approach is generally good with good players and a good team like the Rockets are, and you can get anywhere from 12 to 15 to 1 in the market for them to win it all. It's something I'm at least considering and adding to my position. I already bet preseason on them at 10 to 1.
Well, the other component is you're asking, what are they going to do to guard, Anthony Davis, LeBron, even JaVale McGee? Well, what are those guys going to do guarding the Rockets, right? So it's McGee, who's he going to guard? Tucker in the corner?
Right, and that opens up the paint. Yeah,
no, and then it opens, and then Harden and Westbrook, right, and then obviously Harden's ability to draw fouls and the 3 points. It's to your point. It's the variance, and they almost worked against the Warriors, arguably the best team all time. It almost worked twice in playoff series. So they're right there. And I think we overreact to results too much. We would always say that about Virginia never being able to win it or whoever. Like these,
sure.
And Andy Reid finally got over the hump. Like it's a lot of it's just like kind of random, those like small coin flip outcomes. And the Rockets were right there. And we just need to recognize that. But it is fascinating. And I think there's another move. Remember, they scooped up Beverly from China, Troy Daniels from overseas as well in previous years. I wonder if there's someone overseas too. I was kind of joking that Terrence Jones is playing in the Philippines. Maybe he'll come back.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of not joking. I mean, if you're talking about Jordan Bell, I may rather have Terrence Jones. Like, honestly, Jordan Bell's constantly.
I saw it.
Yeah, like Jordan Bell's constantly lost on defense. He gave up a huge sequence at the end of a quarter last year in the NBA Finals, and Draymond immediately looked at him and started yelling at him. Like, he botches things a lot.
Yep, he's young, and he's athletic, which they might like offensively for what he can do there. And defensively, he'll block a shot into the stands 37 rows up. But you're right, he's definitely a younger player that defensively is probably not a net positive for the Rockets either way.
Yeah, he just reminds me of that, like, that puppy, that golden retriever puppy who just like is running across like a hardwood floor, stops, and then keeps sliding into the wall. That's kind of like Jordan Bell for me, like until he kind of figures it all out.
That's so, it, yeah.
logical comparison there. So here we are. You know, we talk a lot about these long shots in a lot of these sports, right? But I think in the NBA, it's nearly impossible. I think the last kind of off the grid champion was what, the 2011 Mavericks? I know the Warriors, but once they got going in the season, were good. That first year, they beat the Cavs. But for the most part, I mean, Raptors, but obviously once they got Kawhi, I just think like that Mavs team, even going into the playoffs, many weren't thinking they could win it all. I only think there's three teams that can win it all. In the top tier, I think the next tier, those teams could, but it's just hard to project really the Raptors in a playoff series beating these teams 4 out of 7. Even the Celtics in their currently constructed, the Sixers may get it turned around and figure it out, but it's just hard. I know the regular season's different, but I don't see any of those teams, even if they get through the Bucks, being able to beat the Lakers or Clippers in the finals. And yes, the Nuggets are a nice story. I don't think this Rockets nonsense is going to work. I could be wrong. And then even the Jazz. So I just feel like it's Lakers, Clippers, or Bucks this year.
So I definitely agree. More often than not, it is going to be those three teams. The Bucks have just been playing so well. They've kind of been underappreciated how well they're playing, and they could end up winning 70 games this year. I will say this. So of that next tier, if you had to pick one team, just no matter price, price doesn't matter as far as a futures bet or anything. Like, who do you think that fourth best team could be come playoff time?
Well, does it matter which conference? Because going through the East, obviously, a little bit easier than the West
okay.
in terms of likelihood to win. So I would probably take the Sixers as my fourth team, just because I do think they're the second best team in the East. And the Raptors are a nice story. Don't get me wrong. It's just different animal in the postseason, how much Kawhi carried them. And Danny Green. Danny Green is losing him as a negative.
Sure.
And then, I mean, assuming the Lakers and Clippers could maybe, I guess one of them's not going to, they could fall the 4 seed. I don't know. The Clippers might. I maybe want to keep coming back to I think the ceiling for the Jazz is still higher than anybody else in the West outside of those two.
It definitely is. I know we're going to actually talk later today on Daily Wager about Jazz Nuggets a little bit, and I absolutely think the upside for the Jazz is higher than the Nuggets, unless the Nuggets were to make some deal with some of the moves they made last night to set up a trade, say, for like Drew Holiday or something like that. Maybe that's in the mix, but as of now, I agree on that. I will say the fourth, I think it's by far the Sixers, but we've been talking a lot about fit with the Rockets and everything, and they just seemed out of sorts. The whole Ben Simmons thing, obviously, and him not really being able to shoot, and that he won't even shoot to try to open up the offense, and then Embiid's in and out of the lineup. Now he's been back. They just haven't looked like a team that's going to click. But you're right. They are past. I agree. I don't think the Raptors are going to be in the mix ultimately. Maybe the Celtics, if they were to make a move. Currently constructed, I don't think they have a center that can hang. That they're probably just going to get beat up. The Heat, another team that's great story, probably not going to actually be in the mix. So if it's Sixers, Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals, I was looking around just right before we went live here, and like you can get as high as 30-1 on the Sixers to win it all. And we're saying they're like almost always in the Eastern Conference Finals. So 30-1 that they win
two series, maybe figure it out. Maybe they're as healthy as they were last year, and so that all of the starters are playing 45 to 47 minutes again, and they're no longer doing it this season in the regular season because they're trying to save, you know, load management for the playoffs. But you remember in that Toronto series where they were basically a coin flip against them, played them wire to wire, then the four bounces. I mean, they were playing Embiid like 47 minutes in the game. Now, Horford, I think maybe he's slightly dying off, or maybe he's going load management until playoff time, and he has been one of the guys outside of Marc Gasol and Kawhi combo that has been able to slow down Giannis Antetokounmpo to some degree when they're one-on-one, and that's one of the reasons I think they acquired him. So I'm very intrigued by the Sixers now because this price is just getting out of hand, in my opinion, because they're, I think, the sixth spot in the East right now. I could check that, but they've just struggled, and they've had guys in and out. Everyone's kind of discounted them when before the year it was them or the Bucks, and I still think that's the case, but now the price is three times as good.
Yeah, people don't want to admit it, but the Sixers gave the Raptors the toughest test last year, more than the Warriors.
Easy. Yeah.
And more than the Bucks, really. I mean, I know the Bucks were up 2-0 and really probably should have won the series, but all things considered, seven-game series, a couple of them were, you know, really tight down the stretch, including Game 7, went to overtime, I believe, or maybe the shot prevented overtime. But I just don't know if they figured it out, and let's face it, the Sixers team had Jimmy Butler last year, and he made all the key buckets for the most part a year ago, and Simmons and Embiid just haven't figured it out. I don't trust Brett Brown. The Celtics are really intriguing. If they can just add like a small piece big man, right? It doesn't have to be this gigantic trade. I think Brad Stevens is just better with like role players, for lack of a better word, although guys like Tatum and Brown aren't necessarily role players. I just think he's better like without Kyrie and guys who buy in, and he's that good of a coach. So I think the Celtics can get there. I just don't think they can win at all. I just don't think they have a chance against the Lakers or Clippers. I mean, getting to the finals is different.
The Bucks, seven.
Like, I think there's four or five teams that could win the East. Like, I'm not – just maybe I'm scarred by the Bucks collapsing last year. But, like, that's the thing. The Bucks, as awesome as they are, they still – like, there's still a chance they don't get it all together.
Yeah. I mean, Toronto kind of solved them to a degree, and it's not like Brad Stevens couldn't do similar. I was just going to say that, I mean, if there's a team that could be similar to Philadelphia last year, grinds the eventual champion to seven games, say it's Milwaukee, like just wears them down. I mean, yeah, the Celtics could definitely be in that mix, especially like what if they had made the trade in some way for Clint Capella instead of, you know, the
I'd
Hawks.
Be really
like,
high then, on them. Yeah.
Then they have a center that isn't Enes Kanter, Daniel Tice, Grant Williams, undersized center off the bench. Like, yeah, I mean, they maybe get something done in the next 36 to 48 hours. Don't see it happening. So at this point, I'm kind of, I don't know, Sixers at 30-1. When I think they win the East, like 30% of the time is my current projection, just to win the East. You get like 8-1, as high as 8-1 to win the East. And I have it at 30%. So I know the Sixers haven't figured it out, but projecting forward, I still think they're one of the most talented teams in the league, in the NBA. And, you know, if they're playing so many minutes when, like they have in the past in those playoff runs, like last season, then, you know, it doesn't matter that they're not as deep, right? It doesn't matter that Korkmaz has been playing 24 minutes off the bench. He'll probably only be playing 8 to 10 minutes come playoff time.
Yeah, as soon as Grant Williams gets playing time, I get a little worried. I mean, I'm okay with Tice starting. I'm okay with Cam. It's just when, like, they start going Grant Williams, some of the others, I get a little worried.
Yeah.
So, MVP, I saw you tweeting about this. You like minus 230, minus 250 for Giannis.
I do, yeah.
I mean, this is coming. Not. I mean, I'm a guy who was all over Tua two football seasons ago, and then Kyler Murray swooped in. So I'm a little emotionally scarred there.
That's fair. So who? Okay, so Dame Lillard would be the guy that maybe has it would swooping in, but the problem is it's a little too late. But his incredible run has been fun to watch as a fan. But the Blazers just aren't going to win enough games. They might not even be a playoff team. They're probably an underdog to be a playoff team at this point. So I don't see Damian Lillard being in the mix. Luka Doncic, who was at the start, missed some time, came back. Now he's missing more time. They're probably going to go load management with him to some degree as well. And plus, the Magic aren't going to have as good of a record as the Bucks, who may win 70-plus games. And they won't have as good of a record as the Lakers, who LeBron's probably the biggest contender. Now, Harden kind of shot himself out of it a few weeks ago. He had that incredible stretch where he was shooting like 22% overall. He had a couple 1-for-17 from three games. I think he's out. So is it LeBron? Maybe, yeah. If the Lakers have the number one seed in the West, which it looks like, and he just keeps doing his thing. Well, if you compare numbers and you compare just that the Bucks offense is better than the Lakers and the Bucks defense is better than the Lakers and they're going to have more wins. And that Giannis last year in his MVP season averaged 27.7 points And on fewer minutes, over two fewer minutes, he's averaging over 30 this year. On over two fewer minutes per game, he's averaging more rebounds. He's gone from 12.5 to 13.2. He's averaging the same amount of assists. And he's obviously added a three-point threat to some degree, shooting, I think, around 33%. Last year, it was like 25%. So he's way better, and he was already the MVP last year, and his team's better, and they might win 70 games. I just don't see how it's not Giannis, like 90-plus percent of the time, and minus 230, 250. I mean, that's just such a great price where, you know, you're 70-something percent just to break even.
So a couple things. You really think this Luka injury stretch is that big of a setback?
Well, he's gone from like 2.5, 3-1 to 6-1, or even a little bit lower some spots. I mean, he's going to end up missing 15 games probably, and maybe more if he rests more down the stretch. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to – Giannis is on pace to miss, I think, 3 or 4 games. He may rest late when they have the one seed locked up, but at that point, that won't really swing MVP. So, yeah, if he ends up, you know, having 10 to 15 games less – than Giannis as far as how many they've played, then yeah, I think it has pushed Luka aside.
So it could be a perfect storm for LeBron because A, LeBron's LeBron, and B, sort of kind of, I don't know, overshadowed the years that he should have probably won it every year and did not. So he kind of gets forgotten, and this
That's
could be
true.
People sort of be like, make them feel better about themselves, voters. On top of that, there's voter fatigue always with the repeat MVP. It has to be just really a solid campaign in order to get it. And then the Kobe component, like there is an element of like some people might incorporate what he's had to shoulder, assuming this all plays out and they get the one seed, what he's had to shoulder for the franchise and a city and just the magnitude and what it's taken. I think that could fit somewhat into the narrative in the voting.
There could be something there. And if anything, it would have started last night. I don't know if you caught that. He hit 5 threes
crazy.
In the first 3.5 minutes of the fourth quarter. He had never hit 5 threes in a fourth quarter in his life. He did it. He actually didn't do it until about 45 seconds into the first quarter. So I think it was in less than 3 minutes. He just made 5 threes. They pull away. They win against San Antonio. If this turns into some huge Laker LeBron run, remember last night, because that kind of started it, because NBA Twitter was flying. Everyone was talking about it, and no, you could be right. I think that's like the 10%, though, rather than like 1 out of 3 times LeBron is winning MVP. I don't think it's nearly that high. So for me, in that price range, 230, 250, you know, there's some places that are 300s, 400, even minus 500 on Giannis. At that point, it's about fair, in my opinion. But there are some shops still in that 230 to 250 range that are going to be worth betting, I think, still.
Yeah, no, it's I really think because the MVP is such an ambiguous interpretation, it's really left to the voter, and the voter can talk about the most valuable, the best player, and then there's that sort of third, like, you know, what they're doing all the whole package. And obviously the Kobe Lakers LA thing is really important and really a thing in the NBA, and it should be. So I would be the determining factor. So I would hold off even at like 230, 250 for Giannis, because I think there's some legitimacy to this Lakers run and LeBron and all that, like starting with his speech on Friday night. And I just think I would keep an eye on it over the next week. If they start to stumble a little bit, then I think I would pounce on Giannis there.
Real quick, last one, most improved player. I have a bet. You may already know who it's on. I won't say yet, but I'm curious if you had to pick one player this year, most improved, who would you pick if you had to?
You're catching me off guard. I mean, who are like first-year All-Stars that I'm forgetting? Is there someone who's just like off the grid, is now a stud All-Star? But
Sabonis would be, I think, in the mix.
So Devontae Graham is the first guy that comes to mind, just because I think I had read about him like a month ago. So Devontae Graham in the mix. There's some other guys who have kind of like taken the leap, so to speak. So it all depends. Is it scrub to reserve, reserve to All-Star, All-Star to MVP? I think that's the discussion. You have to incorporate. I'm just going through the like team.
Bam Adebayo is another one who's an All-Star.
Yes.
I believe.
So that he's a nice play there in terms of a pick. Like I can see that.
Brandon Ingram wasn't an All-Star, but he was close, and he's had a good year for the Pelicans.
Correct. And
so,
Siakam,
so tell me how it is.
Siakam continues to improve.
That's true. So, and he won last year. So tell me, tell me this though: if Luka went from 19-year-old to 20-year-old, second year in the league, to second or third in the MVP voting, how is he not the most improved player in the NBA? And he is the favorite right now. You can find spots that are still offering it. He's plus 175, but my bet's at 25-1, and it's large. Like, I need Luka to win most improved player, and so I need to use all media platforms we have and anything to get this thrown out there. But I'm now, because I said, I don't think he's going to be in the MVP mix. I'm worried if he does miss 15 to 20 games, maybe it's more after the All-Star break, maybe he doesn't return until then. If he misses too many games, he might not win. So I was just curious if you had thoughts on some other guys. Graham's kind of cooled off. He hasn't been shooting as well for a few weeks. Plus the Hornets, they stopped winning games for a while. They were actually winning basketball games behind Graham, which is an incredible story. So he's died off a little, but
what's SGA? How's his growth?
He's like 14 to 1. So I think he's like the fifth or sixth favorite, if I recall.
Well, I think it all depends like how you grade sort of that exponential curve, like how you assess what Luka did, where he was to MVP candidate versus like Bam to like an all-star. Like it just all depends sort of like the value, if you will, on the chart of how you, what matters more to you in terms of like overall, like, are we talking like a Madden rating, just straight math? Or are we talking like tiers of difficulty of getting to that MVP conversation?
Let's talk about, that's a huge tier. Most players don't even cross it or get to it, right? And people thought he was going to be good and he was fine as a rookie, but he really tailed off the back half of the season. Remember Trae Young made that push. People thought maybe Luka wouldn't even win Rookie of the Year potentially at one point. But I'll say this, because we're talking MVP and we're talking Luka as a 20-year-old, but you look at his numbers, no other player, LeBron included, has had as many like 30-point triple-doubles, and he's doing it on better efficiency because he's shooting way more threes, and we know now a three-pointer is the more valuable shot. And he gets his team involved in a degree that isn't annoying. I hate to use the word annoying, but like James Harden does, right? Because they run a lot of pick and roll, but it's a little more systematic than just like, I'm either going to shoot or pass to a guy for three. Like they're getting more looks inside the cutters. They have these guys that are just the perfect role players around them, and he's made them all so good. And they're going from a team that people anticipated not to be a playoff team. They were an underdog to make the playoffs. They're about a 500 projected team in the season win total. And now they're going to maybe win 50 plus games. So that's all the things I'm looking at, is like, this guy, he's doing stuff no one's ever done before in their second season in the NBA. How is that not the most improved player in the league? But he's too good that people might not vote for him, and I'm certain
they might forget. Yeah, I mean,
worried.
I remember Mark Stein made a case that Steph, the year after winning MVP, should get the MVP again and most improved.
And most improved,
right?
Yep.
And he had a legitimate case. And to your point, the guys I've mentioned, whether it be Devontae Graham, Bam Adebayo, obviously like belong in the discussion, but not to this degree. So yeah, I would have no problem. And the more I think about it, I think Luka's the right guy. So good for you, and I hope it hits. And 25 to 1 is always a nice ticket to cash.
It is. Thank you.
All right, my man. Well, that's going to do it for us. Again, just really abbreviated sort of basketball talk, focusing on the NBA. We're going to do a lot of college and NBA in the coming weeks. But it was good to get you back on the pod. It's been way too long.
Sounds good. You guys take care.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Well, sometimes it does. Thank you, Bob Lee. And thank you to Preston Johnson, also John Murray. I want to thank also Bill Barnwell and Chris Berman again for the previous pod. Got a lot of good feedback on that. It was a lengthy one, so I'm glad everyone got a chance to listen to it. Always good to go down memory lane with Boomer. And Barnwell broke down, had some really good props there. Obviously, the Bell Tozer was significant in the Baby Bankroll Bonanza. Nailed Juszczyk as well. I gave that play on SportsCenter, so good to have that input. Boomer, always great. Had the Chiefs. They win. So a lot of good stuff, and that does it. Next week, we'll dive deeper into college hoops and the NBA as well. As remember, the trade deadline is Valentine's Day weekend, so a week from this coming weekend. And March Madness just around the corner, so a lot of good stuff come around, and we'll talk to you then.